Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. With me, as always, is Eric Steven. Eric, how's it going?
Pretty good. Hello.
The Dodgers had quite a week. We have a jam-packed episode. I hope we can get through it in under an hour. We're going to try, though.
I always know how the week goes when I generally, like, podcast prep is on Sunday night or whatever, and then I'm finishing up, like, the week interview. I tend to write that, like, as the week goes along. But, like, there was so many, like, nuggets, and then, like, so much stuff happened over the weekend. Like, the weekend review post, which is usually, it has, like, a standard length that, like, if I don't write much, it's usually around 600 words or something. Like, if I don't add much at all, this one was 2,200 words. Like, it just was, like, there was so much stuff going on, like to write about. So,
yeah, I don't even know.
Yeah, we got a lot.
I don't know how to sum it up before we go to the ad break. Real quick, Dodgers are 54-25, 13-game lead in the NL West after going 6-1 last week, 7 games played. We've got a quick ad break to start at this beginning, hopefully. We didn't get one last week, even though we said we would. I think we're going to get one this time, and then we'll unpack the week. And we're back. I think maybe that'll be our first actual start ad.
Man,
had technical difficulties last week, but at some point they're coming.
I really love this product, like, way more than last week's product. That's all I'll say.
Last week's product was another wonderful SB Nation podcast, so you should change your tune. It was great.
I meant that.
Unless it was Farmer John, and then, yeah, sure.
right, exactly.
So where do you want to start? There's a lot to talk about. We mentioned that. The rookies, do you want to talk about rookie? That's probably what everyone wants us to start with. So
yeah, but for, I think we should start off as we started off almost every podcast Fair. This year. Just a quick update. Cody Bellinger hit a couple more home runs. We are through 79 games. You mentioned the record. It's the Dodgers. They're tied for their best record through this amount of games since they moved to L.A. 1974 team was also 54-25. They won 104 games, and then they went to the World Series. So the other team that was close was 77. They won 53 games. They also went to the World Series. And then everyone's, of course, going to say, yeah, but they lost the World Series, so they're screwed. It's like, yeah, that's because that's how baseball works, whatever. But so we're almost at the halfway point. You could almost basically just double the totals right now. Cody Bellinger is sitting on 25 home runs and 61 RBIs. And so that puts him at a pace for 51 home runs and 125 RBIs. A nice, if he gets to 50 and 125, nice semi-round numbers. And yeah, exactly.
So Cody Bellinger, former Rookie of the Year. Right. I don't know if any of the Dodger rookies we're about to talk to will be in contention, maybe Verdugo, but they certainly gave us a weekend to remember.
Yeah, the weekend was insane. Like, we'll get in a second. We'll get to, like, the start of the weekend, but let's just go with, like, how those games ended. Like, but you're right. Of the rookies, if their Dodgers are going to have a Rookie of the Year this year, it's going to be Alex Verdugo. I mean, Pete Alonso already has, like, literally 27 home runs for the Mets. So, like, it's an uphill battle, I think, for Verdugo. He's having a really good year. Like, I think his WRC plus is 120. Like, he's been, like, he was going to be, like, a guy who got at-bats this year. Like, you know, they'd mix him in when they could, and he's basically been a starter since A.J. Pollock went down and produced, like, probably more than what Pollock was projected to do. So, like, he's been great. But, yeah, this weekend was about the rookies. It was, like, so we'll just get off to the bat here. The Dodgers ended Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with a walk-off home run by a rookie. Before this weekend, no single team had ever done that two games in a row with rookies doing it, and the Dodgers did it three games in a row. So, like, and, like, the crazy part too, like, the Dodgers did a little bit of roster shenanigans with and we'll talk about this later, but, like, Matt Beatty, he was technically sent down on Thursday, but then because they put someone on the DL Friday, he was back after just a day rather than having to wait the 10 days. So he won. So like the day he's back, Beatty hits the home run, and then Will Smith started Sunday morning in Oklahoma City and takes a plane to Los Angeles and then ends the game later. It's like we talk about, like, you know, how deep the Dodgers are, and like a lot of that depth was like it was going to be Alex Verdugo, who's homegrown. But then they have David Freese has been like one of the best hitters in the National League on their bench. He's on the injured list now, just like Corey Seager is. And like it's just all these like rookies that are stepping up. Like we mentioned Will Smith, Verdugo, obviously, but Will Smith and Matt Beatty, they started the year in AAA. Kyle Garlick started the year in AAA. He's hitting well too. He hit two home runs last week, didn't hit a walk off. So it's kind of crazy. But like I looked at those three guys, Beatty, Garlick, Smith, all started the year in AAA. They're hitting 327, 361, 575, seven home runs, seven doubles, and 23 RBIs in 119 plate appearances. So they played basically like 5 weeks worth of like a regular's playing time, maybe 5-6 weeks, and they're hitting like an all-star. So like that's crazy. Like the Dodgers are getting crazy production. So you know, it's just been amazing. But the thing I wanted to get to, so in order, Beatty was Friday night. Alex Verdugo hit the walk-off in extra innings on Saturday, and then Will Smith hit the walk-off on Sunday. It was a pinch hit job. A three-run shot in the ninth, but the most amazing thing, the reason why we're talking about this first is, I didn't hear this till after the fact, but you texted me and said I had to listen to it. Charlie Steiner's call of that home run was the most Charlie Steiner call of all time.
You linked me to a home run. Was it in Coors?
No. There was a play in Toronto. From like 2016, I think.
Yeah, maybe we'll link to that video because it is the most dynamic. Okay,
I think Alex Alex from Dodgers Digest sent me that link via Twitter, and I listened to it, and it's like he got everything wrong. Yeah. like the ball, there was a fly ball to let like deep in the outfield with two outs in the ninth, and I think he called it like the wall, and then Jock Peterson caught it. Kike was the one who caught it, and then either way the Dodgers win. This is like, it was, man, so Charlie Steiner gets a lot of shit, right? And rightfully so. He's terrible at judging fly balls, like, and both ways. We talked about this too, like he'll not recognize a truly like hit home run. He'll undersell it. That's what he did with the Will Smith home run. We'll get to it. But then he'll also like, there's a high fly ball way back, and it's like a medium fly out, you know, that kind of thing. Like if he was imagine if he was a cameraman, like he would, your eyes would like bulge out of your head. It's crazy. But anyway,
this call was, I don't have it pulled up.
Yeah, and I don't think
baseball would yell at us. So
yeah, I don't think we could use the audio, but I did transcribe it.
Okay, and, I'll let you do it then.
Because like I can't do the key here is like his mood, like when it starts off like he's talking about how what Will Smith was doing at AAA, and then it's like right into the quote, he pops it up into center field, like it was literally like that level of excitement, like. It was like it was the can of corn. There's two outs in the ninth, so this is like, okay, we're going to extra innings. Clearly, this is an out. And then like you could hear the crowd sort of knew, right? Like, in fairness to Steiner, off the bat, this did not seem like a home run to me, and I think to a lot of people. But the ball did keep carrying. But if you heard the crowd and watch the outfielders, which is, you know, what normal baseball watchers do, they can sort of tell by context clues that the ball's going to actually do something positive for the offense. And like the way as like, I think it was Hampson, I believe, in center, he was like near the wall. And then like, as he's like starting to like jump at the wall, Steiner, like you could tell he realizes something, and he goes, now drifting on back. Like he didn't, the excitement wasn't there yet, but it was just like, Like, he's just, you know, sort of adding to it. And then the best part to me of the call was he almost interrupts himself with his own surprise. Like, and he goes, "That's more than a pop-up. It's a walk-off home run." Like, he's so surprised. And, like, and then he kicks in. He's a professional announcer. He has, like, a good, like, announcer cadence and all this. And then he adds, "The ball kept carrying and carrying." Like, it's the perfect call. I was laughing so hard. I think I've listened to it 20 times since last night. It's really great. I'm linking to it. I tweeted it out. I'm linking to it in the show notes. You have to listen to it. It's wonderful. It's really great. So, yeah, it was pretty awesome.
My experience with the home run, the Will Smith home run, I was at a friend's house, so I was following on game day and texting you,
mm-hmm.
because I had been watching the game on MLB TV on my phone, but we had the Start Playing board game, so I kind of put it away, but was still looking. And I just see in play runs and any hard hit.
Right.
Base hit scores the winning run. But I was rooting so hard for it to be the home run, just for the narrative, the story, to really enjoy it. So when I saw the scores change to 6-3, I was very, very happy person.
Yeah. So it's first and second for Smith. And do you want to get to one of Craig's questions? Because it kind of feeds right into this. Like, they actually walked Russell Martin. Beatty was on second after a wild pitch. He got on, and then he advanced to second on a wild pitch. So it's runner on second, two outs. They walked Russell Martin to get to Will Smith, who was pitch hitting for the pitcher.
So the second question is, baseball manager knows more than me, but were you too surprised by the decision to walk Martin to pitch to Smith? So what's really interesting, interesting to me is I don't remember the exact situation. I think it was in the 10th, but I'm not positive. A very, very similar situation happened in Saturday's game, except that, same thing. Second base, first base was open. Martin was up. It was a right-hander, and I think Freeze was the only batter left on the bench. And at that point, they were in extras, and Baez was pitching. And I was surprised that they didn't do it then, because I thought Baez could go two innings, and in an extra innings game, trying to burn the pitcher to get to the non-favorable platoon made sense. And in this case, Will Smith has been hitting the tar off the ball in AAA. It, more surprising to me, you do put the foot put out on because Beatty had stolen second. So I was a little less surprised than I think everyone else was, but I still don't think I would have done it.
Yeah, I think so. For me, like, I was surprised as well. I was surprised, but like, so upon further review, I'm still like still surprised a little bit by it. But if you look at it, like, you're with Martin, he doesn't really hit for power anymore. He does have a couple home runs, but he's slugging like in the threes, and that's with hitting 260. So he has, I think he's hitting 260 and slugging 350. So, like, there's no power there. But he gets on base. That's his thing. But with a runner on second, a single scores the run. So it's, like, likelihood of a single. Is Martin really a 260 hitter? Maybe not. More like a 240, 250 type hitter. So you're saying who has the better chance of getting a single if you're the Rockies? Like, that's who you're, you know. And so they figured Martin had a better shot of getting a hit in the situation than Smith. And I get it. Smith's a rookie. But still a little surprising, but certainly didn't expect to hit the home run. The thing that I was laughing at was, so the game, we have to mention, we'll get to him in a second, but Chris Taylor hit a go-ahead three-run home run in the seventh. The Dodgers were down 2-0. He had a pinch hit, three-run shot, and it put them up 3-2, and then it looked like they would win in that fashion. But then in the eighth, the Rockies scored on I forgot, someone tweeted it, I'll just say, so there was a ball into the corner, I forgot who was running, I think it was Daniel Murphy,
it was,
and relay throw had him by 30 feet maybe at the plate, and it was, but the throw bounced to the home plate, but and Martin had He just whiffed it. Like, it went right out of his glove, and he just dropped it. So, like, the easiest out at the plate you're going to see. and he just plain dropped it. And like some people were tweeting at me like he totally Grandal'd that, you know, that kind of a thing. It was really bad. And then, I was laughing because, or not laughing, but I was just thinking like, at this point they already had the two straight rookie walk-off. So I think I tweeted out like right when that happened. You can't have a third rookie walk-off if you're leading before the bottom of the ninth and with the guy pointing to his head, meme or whatever. So, and then it sure enough, Will Smith came through, two innings later. So that was nuts.
Real quick. You and I recorded late on last week on Monday.
Yeah.
And one thing we talked about a little bit on the episode and a little bit more after we stopped recording, which is how bad Chris Taylor looked.
Yes.
Since that recording, six games, a batting average of 500.
Yep, 10 for 20.
An OPS of 1.592, three home runs, 10 RBIs.
I looked at the numbers. So, yeah, we talked about on last Monday's podcast, we recorded during the game, but we didn't have the stats like for that game. But he was 0 for 4 Monday. So, yep. Whatever we said last week, consider it slightly worse. But remember at the time, he really bad offensive numbers. And then I looked in, I was like, maybe what about his batted ball? I was trying to think like, how is it like, in terms of like, maybe he's getting unlucky. Like Justin Turner was that way earlier in the year. He was actually hitting the ball pretty hard, but not getting a lot of results. And the results sort of came after that. But man, Taylor was like, all like everything was like bottom 3%, bottom 5%. So it was like in average, exit velocity, really low expected batting average. So I looked up after Monday's game, after the 0-for-4, he was 218, 288, 383. His WRC plus was 77. The 100 is average. Anything below is below average. That's really bad. And then after Sunday's game, so he was 10 for 20 with three home runs, two doubles, 11 RBIs. One of the guys I work with, Alex Rubenstein at SB Nation, he came up with a stat and I didn't realize it. Before last week, Chris Taylor had one 3-run home run in his career. He hit a bunch of grand slams, but he just had one 3-run home run and he hit two last week. So, kind of crazy. But so after Sunday, he is now hitting 245, 315, 447, and 99 wins created plus, so our weighted runs created plus,
unreal. That is
so he's basically an average, an average hitter with defensive versatility who plays short. So like he's back to like Chris Taylor, you know, like, and that's in 6 days. He raised his OPS 91 points in 6 days. That seems crazy. I was going to go back like with Smith now, right? The Dodgers have three catchers, and I was looking at this. We've talked about this. Like Smith was like red hot. Like before, when the Dodgers sent him down, you know, he just kept hitting in AAA. He had five straight games with a home run. He homered in six out of seven games before he was called up. So now it's technically seven out of eight. But like I was looking at the numbers for June and Barnes and Martin. Martin has been hitting a little more than Barnes. Barnes was really slumping. Even Barnes hit a home run this week. The offense was really like humming this whole week when they won six straight. But for June, just Barnes and Martin combined are 239, 301, 313. So they really haven't been getting anything out of their catchers. So the one thing that Smith does, I don't think he's going to take a ton of time at catcher. I think it's literally with Freeze on the shelf, they needed another right-handed bat. And I think Dave Roberts mentioned something Sunday. I think he said it's going to free up the right-handed pinch hitters. And what we saw on Sunday is that that means now he's more likely to pinch hit for Barnes or Martin, given who he has left on the bench. Like yesterday, he pinch hit for Barnes in the seventh. With Taylor, and then Taylor hit the 3-run home run on the first pitch, so paid immediate dividends. Usually with the two catcher set up, you're a little less likely to pinch hit for your catcher. The managers are always leery about like wanting to lose their catcher for extra innings. The Dodgers are a little more aggressive in that, but they just don't pinch hit a ton. for the catchers, but I think they're more likely to now. And then I think Roberts mentioned too, Barnes could play some second this week. Martin could play some third. So they could get some real Frankenstein stuff going on. We'll see. They go to Coors. It's going to get weird. I don't know if they'll play them there, but they Arizona first. But yeah, it's going to be a weird week.
I have a prediction question for you.
Yes.
Who's the starting catcher for the Dodgers in the first game of the playoffs? Knocking on wood. I'm assuming they're not playing a 13 game lead.
Sure. So yeah, it's not the play-in game for the wild card. Let's say, I think it's going to be Austin Barnes.
Okay. Is Will Smith on the playoff roster?
Man. So you got to figure, like, so.
See, this is the Eric Steven curse I'm trying to reverse jinx. Where
no chance!
Seager wouldn't get called up. Puig wouldn't get called up. We've done it before.
So, in a perfect world, you know, A.J. Pollock's back. David Freese is back. And that kind of, like, literally right now, we just talked about Matt Beatty, Kyle Garlick, and Will Smith are on the roster. So, like, that two of those guys are going to be gone with Pollock and Freese and Seager back. So, basically, all three of those guys are gone if those guys are back. So, now other people can get hurt, obviously. So, who knows, man?
This reminds me of the situation where this team will really, especially if they have, like they do this season than they did in 2017, they have a comfortable lead. They're going to let the slumping veterans work things out, get things going. But when it comes to the playoffs, they seem to really stick to what they think is the best. We saw this when Austin Barnes started starting a lot of the games in the playoffs over the entrenched Grand Draw.
And
I think I don't know for sure we'll get there, but I could definitely see a situation where Will Smith just proves he's a more valuable asset than Austin Barnes and somehow makes that happen. I don't know how exactly, I think it happens.
I could see that. So the problem is you have two situations. So Barnes took over in the playoffs in 2017. Wait, was it 17? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then midway through 2018 playoffs. One, in 2017, Grandal had his like usual sort of injury sort of slump at the end of the year where he was almost unplayable, how bad he was hitting. So I think Barnes has to get to that level to do that, or just be atrocious behind the plate like Grandal was in the playoffs last year, where he just could not catch the ball. It was crazy. So they like had to make a change. Barnes is like, you know, still fine defensively. Same with Martin, actually. So I think they're fine with what they're getting in like game calling and framing in just about everything from a catcher. So I think that's why. So it would really have to be, it really have to go downhill. Now, we talked about this, and I'm sure we'll get to this a little later, about if they were to acquire a big name, and really the only big type of name that I think would be out there is like a starting pitcher type, then I think you could see a situation where a team wants like a major league catcher back or something like that. So maybe a Austin Barnes is included in that type of a trade. I keep throwing this out there. I have no idea if, like they're even talking, but like let's say the Mets want a catcher for when they as part of the Noah Syndergaard package, right? So you send Barnes in as part of that deal. Not that he's headlining the deal, but like just as to give them a major league catcher, and then you sort of roll with Martin and Smith at that point with the Dodgers. So I think that's more the scenario where Will Smith gets his chance. But otherwise, I think they're going to stick with Barnes and Martin.
Now, we have more from this week to talk about, but we need to talk about the All-Stars first. But I think we need a quick ad break before we do that. You ready?
Sure.
Okay. The All-Star game, I guess the All-Star game itself isn't different this year, but how players get on it sure as heck is confusing me, Eric. Can you demystify this for me?
Yeah, it's always weird because so the All-Star game is 2 weeks away. It's on July 9th in Cleveland.
Gosh.
Right. It doesn't seem like that. It's how quickly the season goes by. But so there's always a thing where, so the general breakdown is fans elect starting the starting position players, the managers and the commissioner's office. It used to be the manager. Now it's technically the commissioner has final say over this stuff, but it's like usually like a concentrated effort, like between the parties. So, but they select the reserves, and then, I mean, I'm sorry, the players get their say as well. But then the commissioner's office selects the reserves, but there's always controversy like, oh, like, you know, Dave Roberts or Bruce Bochy or something, they screwed my player. They should have, but a lot of this is like everyone has to have every team has to have a player. And also the players sometimes like they vote weird. Fans vote weird too. Like, but I'm generally fine with it. It's usually all right. But like, so it's a long process. But anyway, the change this year is instead of like one series of just a simple like fan vote for a set amount of time, then the winners are the starters. This year they switched it up. I think the popularity of the final vote is sort of what drove this, where the final all-star roster spot is five guys for each league, and then it's just a crazy online campaign. We've seen teams like they did this with Justin Turner a couple years ago, where the Dodgers like set aside an area at Dodger Stadium with just full of computers and had volunteers like voting like 24/7. I think we're going to see that this week, because what they did, they changed the new sort of system is now a primary voting system and then a starters election. So the first round of fan voting is already over, and they selected the top three vote getters at every position, and for the outfielders, the top nine. Those players won the quote unquote won the primary, and the two Dodgers affected here, the only two Dodgers that were in their top spots were Cody Bellinger, who was actually the top vote getter overall in baseball. He's had such a great year, and like even more votes than Christian Yelich, and then I think Mike Trout was the only other to get over 3 million. So those were the top three like overall vote getters. But and then the other one, other Dodger that's relevant here is Jock Peterson, who was, I'm looking this up, he was ninth among National League outfielders. So the thing now, all these new players, like the vote starts over. And so none of the votes they previously got count, but I think it's a pretty good indication of how it's going to go. It's going to be this weirdly concentrated, it's technically 28 hours. It starts on Wednesday, 9 o'clock Pacific, 12 Eastern, and it goes for 28 hours till Thursday at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 Eastern. So it's like MLB.com. And then also there was something, I'm just going to read this from the MLB release to sort of give you an idea of how convoluted this is. During this second phase of voting, in which fans can vote once on MLB platforms and submit up to 17 unique player votes on Google. So I was reading this. It's like, I think the 17 is not like you can't vote for like Cody Bellinger 17 times. It's the 17 is that there's 8 position players in the National League and then 9 in the American League because they have a DH. So I think that's what it is. So it's not like the final vote where it was literally like you could just have a hashtag of like Turner or so or whatever it was. Like they always have the dumb weird hashtags that where teams – I hate that part about the final vote where like a National League team and an American League team would team up and then –
No, it was great. It was the Royals and the Dodgers for me. It was perfect.
So, yeah, so like it's not going to be like that. So there's not going to be a series of Twitter hashtags or anything, but it's going to be like a single 28-hour blitz where you can only vote once. So and then whatever on Google. But so then the starters are announced. They're announced on Thursday, and then by Sunday, the rest of the teams will be announced. So the total breakdown is 32 players total on each team, 20 position players, 12 pitchers. So it's pretty much the same. Bellinger's going to start. I don't think that's very much in question. It'll be shocking if he doesn't win one of the starting spots in the National League outfield, but he's going to be the only one position player wise. The manager technically chooses the starting pitcher from among the players on his roster. And like, it'd be hard pressed to not have Hyunjin Ryu start. His ERA right now, it actually ballooned on Saturday. He gave up 3 runs. Only one of them were earned. And his ERA ballooned all the way from 126 to 127. So if you can't start the All-Star game with an ERA that low, like, what the hell's going on with your manager as your All-Star manager? Like, he's starting that game. And they even, like, this wasn't the reason they did it, but they did it to give extra rest. They slotted in Urias for a start last week, but it moved Ryu away from the Sunday game before the All-Star game. If you pitch on Sunday, you're ineligible to pitch in the All-Star game. So the weird thing now, we'll get to it in a second, but I think Walker Buehler is probably the most deserving other Dodger starter to get there. You can make an argument that Clayton Kershaw would, on like past history, he's still really good this year, a sub-3 ERA. I think of those two, I think Walker Buehler probably deserves it more, but we'll see. But now the way the rotation sets up the rest of these 2 weeks before the All-Star break, Buehler was originally like slotted into that Sunday slot after Ryu, after they, you know, the maneuver happened. But now I think it's going to be where Buehler doesn't even pitch that Sunday. So I think he'll be eligible too. I have some position players' thoughts as well. Do you have any, like, for sure All-Stars that you think on the Dodgers?
It's one of the things where there's a number of players on the Dodgers who sort of in a vacuum, that performance is an All-Star-worthy right. performance. But then you have to look at the rest of the National League, and there's a lot of stiff competition. The National League is really good this year.
Yeah. And it's weird. Like, I was looking at this. It's good, but also, like, it's very concentrated. Right now, there's only 7 teams with winning records.
Yeah.
And, like, 3 of them are, like, 3 games over or less. So, like, and only 6 teams make the playoffs. So, but you're right. Like, just looking, like, Max Muncy is probably the most deserving non-Bellinger. Like, Corey Seager, if he didn't get hurt, he was, like, sort of making his way up that sort of shortstop leaderboard. But, like, just in the National League, you basically have – he's fighting against – he's not one of the starter finalists, but you have Josh Bell, Freddie Freeman, Pete Alonso at first, like, and Anthony Rizzo. Like all those guys have, like, comparable numbers. So it's going to be tough for Muncy. He gets points on versatility. He's played second and third as well. And like, Muncy's numbers do hold up, but, and like I said, if Dave Roberts has any sway, he might be able to get him on there, but we'll see. But I think of those guys, I would say if I had to pick, it's like Jansen he's more of the star of, you know, the bullpen, but I don't know if his numbers have been good enough. Maybe the players are vote for him. Who knows? But I think it's going to be, you know, Bellinger and Ryu start the game, and then they have Buehler and Muncy as reserves. But I'm not like terribly like convinced of the rest.
Well, you keep talking about how adamant you are, how deserving Walker Buehler is. We saw no better example of that than this past weekend. The fact that this game is getting pushed to, we're at like the 33-minute, 35-minute mark on this recording, that the 16 strikeout, no walk, 9-inning masterpiece is kind of almost an afterthought is just unreal.
Right. Here's how good that game was. You know, Walker Buehler, right? He's young. He doesn't turn 25 until I think next month. I forget when his actual birthday is, but he pitched the first 6 innings of a no hitter last year. He had a scoreless game in a play-in or game 163 to win the division, He had 7 scoreless innings and a dominant World Series start. He had 7 starts this season where he gave up less than the 2 runs he gave up on Friday night. But still, Friday night for me was the Walker Buehler game. Or it's, you might even say the Walker F. Buehler game, because he was so good. Like, he was dominant. Like, the two runs he gave up were solo shots to Nolan Arenado and a white-hot Charlie Blackmon. And so, like, he was mowing guys down in that game, and he just kept getting better. And, like, you know, we see a lot with, like, high strikeout games, a lot of pitch counts get run up. He was, like, cruising with high strikeouts. Like, he was just throwing strike after strike. He walked 0. He ended up striking out 16. He's the first Dodgers pitcher ever to strike out 16 and walk 0. The first Dodger pitcher to strike out 16 in any game since Tadeo Nomo in 1996. Nomo had 17 in that game. It was the first complete game of his career. And I think the thing that stood out to me was, look, we know the Dodger bullpen has, like, generally been struggling this year. They've actually been a little better the last couple weeks. But, like, I think in that game, there wasn't, like, much of a question at all that Buehler was going to bat.
I was surprised.
You really? Okay.
In my mind, was he at 99?
Yeah, something like that. he finished with 113 pitches. So, like, you know, I think very manageable. You're right, though. I mean, like, look, Dave Roberts he's pulled Ross Stripling from a no-hitter in the 8th. He pulled Rich Hill from a perfect game in the 8th.
Dodgers had an 11-game lead in the division. Like,
right. I would say
I didn't mind the decision, mind you. To be clear, I don't want to get yelled at on Twitter.
No, but no, for sure.
I just was thought, very Dave Roberts, good job. That was 99 pitches. You're done. Yeah. We're going to throw, you know, Pedro or Kenley out there and get the win. You know, you don't get the win, but.
Yeah, because it was 2-2 at the time. I think he was so dominant, though, it was like,
yeah,
you just got to let him run. And, like, he did. He gave up a single, a one-out single in the 9th to Blackmon. Blackmon, at the end of game Friday, he had an 11-game inning streak where he was 28 for 56. He hit 500 with 8 home runs and, like, 5 doubles and a triple. So he was, like, as hot as you could possibly be. And so to have him and get 2 hits, no big deal. But he struck out 3 in the 9th. That was sort of rare. I wanted to see, like, I know this old story, like, Sandy Koufax struck out the last 6 batters of his perfect game. Famously, I think Johnny Roseborough went to him either in the 7th or the 8th, and Koufax said, like, I can't throw my curve, my arm's killing me. And John Roseborough just turned to Sandy and goes, let's just go with the heat, babe. And he goes fastball the rest of the game, and he struck out the last 6 batters. So it's, I looked it up. This took forever on Saturday. Went through, like, every complete game log for the Dodgers since they moved to LA. But 17 different times LA Dodgers pitcher has struck out, a starting pitcher struck out 3 in the 9th. The Kershaw did it twice. Kevin Brown did it before that. In the last, like, 30 years or 35 years or something, I think Fernando was the only other one in, like, sometime in the 80s. So, very rare for that to happen. It was really good. But, like, look, Ryu has been awesome this year. He just came off a crazy May where he gave up 3 runs all month. So far, Walker Buehler's given up 3 runs all June. He's walked 1 batter this month, 42 strikeouts and 31 innings. You know, he had a abbreviated spring training because he was sort of dealing with some, like, a dead arm and dealing with stuff. So he got off to sort of a rocky start to the regular season. And so the sort of, like, the running, like, joke was April was his spring training, you know, that kind of thing. If you treat that as his sort of spring training since the beginning of May, 189 ERA in 9 starts, 76 strikeouts, 4 walks for Walker Buehler. So, like, he has been just mowing guys down. We saw this in the second half last year. He was the Dodgers' best pitcher. So he's kind of doing that again, and it was just fantastic. And then he struck out the 3 in the 9th, the top of the 9th, so it's still 2-2. And the Dodgers still had to win that game to get him the win. And then Matt Beatty delivered the 2-run shot for the walk-off. And it was nice that it ended that way for Buehler. But, yeah, it was just what a fantastic game that was.
you mentioned the bullpen struggling, which I think has been the sort of one knock on the Dodgers basically the entire season, even if they've looked a little bit better over the last month or so. But not only was the bullpen, you know, is kind of shaky, the other big reason why that Walker Buehler game was so important is in this dominant week, this, you know, this is the week the Dodgers really, in all the power rankings, have firmly been number one over the Astros. Granted, a lot of that had to do with how bad the Astros were. But still, a very dominant week for the Dodgers in which they had two bullpen games.
Oh, right. Yeah, and like and only, oh, sure. Only one of those was planned. Like, yeah. Like, so, the reason they had 18 games in a row, 18 days, 18 games in 18 days. So they wanted to break up the starters a little bit to give them an extra day. So they slotted in, they planned to start in Julio Urias on Thursday. So they were already sort of planning for that with a Ross Stripling sort of piggyback type of a thing. And then on Wednesday, Rich Hill goes out and like he pitched a scoreless first. Then he starts the second inning, like throws the curveball during warmups and is like, nope, I'm done. Walked off the mound. It was weird because the Dodgers first put out the word that Rich Hill had left forearm tightness. And then it was one of those things, it was almost like you could tell like someone was uncomfortable with how that got out there, because like that's always like the red flag, like that eventually means you tore your UCL and you have to have Tommy John surgery. So that's what everyone's sort of thinking about. But then within like an inning or two, the Dodgers modified it to left forearm discomfort to like sort of soften the yeah, I'm sure he's fine. So he had the MRI the next day. It actually showed a flexor strain of the tendon. So all things considered, sort of good, but like still significant. Like he didn't, I guess the MRI showed no UCL damage. So he doesn't have to have Tommy John surgery, and he's like 39. So it's one of those, like, he might still have it, but like, do you retire at that point, or do you cause he's going to be a free agent. Like what do you do? But it's not there yet. He's not even going to pick up a ball for 3 to 4 weeks. So he's not even going to like throw until after the All-Star break. So that, if factor in rehab after that, there's no way he's pitching before August. So he's basically out 2 months. So they had sort of have to like fill in. But it was funny. I was just sort of looking at the Dodgers rotation has been ridiculous this year. I know we've talked about this before, but like, if you just go to the baseball reference page, right? Like, and just look at, there's obviously advanced numbers, things like that, but just look at the ERAs. Like, Ryu's 127, Kershaw's 296, Buehler's 285, Rich Hill was 255 before he got hurt. Kenta Maeda is like the black sheep of the rotation. He's 376, and he went seven strong innings on Sunday. Like, and then the extra guys, they have Ross Stripling 308, Urias 284. Those are the guys with the top seven inning totals on the Dodgers. So, like, the pitching staff has been ridiculously good. You have to go to their 10th most innings pitched this year to find someone with an ERA that starts with a 4. That's Yimi Garcia, if you were wondering, 418 in 28 innings. So Joe Kelly, in case you were wondering, is 12th in innings. So you have to go pretty far down. But, yeah, it's just been ridiculous. So you figure the Dodgers, from a short-term standpoint this week, they haven't actually said who's going to fill in for Hill on Tuesday, which is when his sort of – his start is coming up, but it's going to be one of Stripling or Urias. Now, the thing here that's sort of also interesting, they haven't announced this yet. By the time this podcast comes out, I'm sure it'll be announced or we'll have a better idea. They actually listed Wednesday starters TBD as well. And if they just stuck to the rotation, it would be Walker Buehler. But you can understand, like, he just pitched, like, the first nine-inning game of his career. They always lean toward extra rest when they possibly can. They have a 13-game lead in the division. They're going to play it ultra safe. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to have two sort of fill-in starts in Arizona. And then we talked about this a little bit with the All-Star stuff. So the way – if that pushes Buehler to Thursday, they have an off day next week. So he would basically pitch Thursday and then Wednesday before the All-Star break and then be done until after the All-Star break. So that opens him up to pitch in the All-Star game and still be like fully fine after the break. And he gets a good amount of rest. Same with Ryu. So it's good for them, but now it's just a matter of who pitches those games. Do they go, I guess it depends on bullpen use, but do they go, Stripling one game, Urias the other? Or I guess the other sort of hot rumor out there is that Tony Gonsolin, who's been pitching very well with AAA, he could be called up. Like, they would need a clear 40-man spot, but that's like pretty easy to do. He's got a 2.77 ERA with Oklahoma City and 8 starts. Actually, they were sort of slow playing him for a little bit, but 31 strikeouts in 26 innings. We'll see if he gets one of those spot starts. Who knows? But it's going to be an interesting week. We talked about the Frankenstein stuff with Martin at third and Barnes at second. I almost forgot. Jock Peterson played first. Jock Peterson's a first baseman now.
Well, that's how he can get into the All-Star game.
Right, exactly. So, was it an adventure? He had a couple pop-ups Sunday that were like two foul pops in the same inning that were like, my God, those are adventures. But he had a play where he dropped a short out at first that would have been in the inning. They ended up giving up a run after that. But growing pains at first, but I mean, that's sort of the thing there. When Pollock comes back, it allows Verdugo to play more in the outfield and it allows them to maneuver around a little more. So I think that's why they're doing it. And he needs to get some practice there. And guess what? When you have a 13-game lead in the division, you have room to sort of do this kind of stuff. So it's going to be, we'll see. And so they have room to, give the rotation a rest, bring up some other rookie. If the season's any indication, the rookie's probably going to do okay when he comes in.
I was going to say, I realize these are going to be away games, but a rookie starter is another opportunity for at least a go-ahead home run from another different rookie.
Oh, yeah. I saw someone, I forgot who tweeted this, but it said, man, it's unfortunate the Dodgers can't get a fourth straight rookie walk-off on Monday. It's because they're playing on the road, but we'll see.
You ready for some questions?
I am actually, before we get to that, I'm throwing this in late only because I was looking at this up this morning. Will Smith, his home run Sunday, walk-off home run, was his second walk-off of the year. The last Dodger rookie to have two walk-off home runs in a season. I don't know if you saw my tweet or not, so I will allow you the chance to answer this.
I'll let you do it. I saw it. It'd be cheating.
Okay. So it's Trace Thompson. He's also the last Dodger of any experience to do that. I tweeted out a list. Andre Ethier had a crazy year in 2009. He had 4 walk-off home runs. He had 6 walk-off hits, but that tied a major league record, the 4 home runs. But Trace Thompson, he's now in the AAA in the Cleveland system. He played for the Dodgers in 2016, 2017. And then he really got hurt by a back injury that sort of curtailed everything. But the reason I wanted to bring up Trace Thompson was because during the NBA Finals, his brother Klay Thompson, there was a period where he was asked about, a lot of people like doubting or questioning Kevin Durant. And the quote, Ann Killian tweeted this out, I think it was at one of the media scrums, but Klay Thompson said, "That's just the nature of the game, whether KD, Muhammad Ali, LeBron, Michael, who's a baseball player, ? All are questioned." Now, Klay Thompson has a brother who's a Major League Baseball player, and he could not come up with a baseball player off the top of his head. Now, I realize we're just having fun here. He was clearly listing like all-time greats in sports, but I just thought it was funny that his go-to for a baseball player was – who's a baseball player when he's one of the like few guys on earth who has like family who's actually playing in the majors, I guess in the minors this year, but who's a major league caliber player. So I just thought that was a funny tweet.
All right. Now, are you ready?
Fine. We can get to
questions. That's becoming a regular segment, is the like last minute bit of, Eric news before we do questions. I'm fine with it. I'm A-okay with it.
It just means I either did extra research or something popped up in my head at the very last second after we already planned it. So who knows?
So we have one question before we get to Craig's questions, of which we've already answered one. Jack wants to know, are you in or out on Free Kozowski for 2019?
So, look, we just talked about how all these rookies have been, like, contributing to the Dodgers. So I'm not going to put it past them to, like, call up another rookie. Marshall Kozowski, he was drafted by the Dodgers in 2017 at Texas A&M. He is 24. He's pitching in Double-A Tulsa. So he actually has been really good, 2.22 ERA. He has 41 strikeouts in 24 and a third innings, but also 14 walks. So there's a little bit of command to go with the power, but it's almost a 40% strikeout rate. So that's really good. I'm not on Free Kozowski necessarily. I don't think they need to add him to the 40 man anytime soon. So there's no real reason to rush. And they do have a lot of, as much as they need bullpen help, I don't think throwing someone directly from Double-A into the majors, especially given the amount of walks he's given up, is that pressing. Like, they don't have to do it right now. That said, impressive arm, not putting it past him. So we'll see. He hasn't allowed a home run this year, 104 batters faced, so that's always good. But I think pump the brakes a little bit on that. Like, they still have, like, a guy like JT Chagual, who's up in the bullpen now, I'd rather see him get innings, you know, more innings than calling up like Kozowski.
All right. Craig leads off with a food question. Summer is here. You're making a fresh fruit salad. What fruits are must-haves in your creation?
Okay, so we're going to earn the explicit tag this week because I saw a tweet before I saw this question. It was last week. I forgot who tweeted it, and I can't find it. But the gist of the tweet was, man, honeydews can fuck off. So I don't mind honeydews, but if I'm making fruit salad, it probably doesn't have honeydew. You got to have a cantaloupe in there. Watermelon works. Pineapple, of course.
Yeah, pineapples, pick one.
Strawberry. Grapes are always a go-to. I'm a red or a green. I'm indiscriminate on grapes. I'm trying to think. I guess bananas, maybe. I love bananas, but I don't know if I have to actually add them to the fruit salad. They're fine. So I think the more the merrier. If your last name is Rockefeller and you want to get a mango or a kiwi and add in there, sure, that's always good.
Mangoes are my second pick after pineapple, and
yeah, they're great.
Worth it.
Yeah, for sure.
Strawberries are my. I keep it simple. Give me three or four fruits, and I'm gonna do three: mango, pineapple, and strawberries. Done.
Are you pro honeydew or anti honeydew?
I generally, outside of mangoes, am not a fan of melons in generally. So
I see. Yeah. Hashtag honey don't.
So we already answered Craig's second question, but as a fill-in, I have a question from Eric Steven.
Okay.
What do Scott Van Slyke and Ken John have in common?
Oh, okay. Yeah. This came up because after we recorded last week, randomly,
you texted me this, so I just to be clear how you're.
I figured I might as well talk about it on the podcast. So randomly was looking up something on the Twitter app on my phone. Somehow stumbled across some tweet from a comedian who was linking to something from that Ken Jeong tweeted. I tried to tweet on it. It said, "You are blocked from seeing Ken Jeong's tweets." And I was like, "What?" And so my immediate reaction is like, I don't really know of anyone else who blocked me other than Scott Van Slyke, which was the weirdest because, like, of all the players I've like covered, like, he was one of the nicest like ever. We had a good relationship when he was with the Dodgers. We never like got into it or anything. Always like friendly. We talked to each other just casually, like in the clubhouse or whatever. We're not like friends by any means, but like he was following me on Twitter even. And I must have tweeted something that he just didn't take the right way or whatever, but I've been blocked for a few years from seeing Scott Van Slyke's tweets. I don't know how long I've been blocked from Dr. Ken, but I was looking back. I was like, why would he block me? That's so weird. Like, I'm not like famous. I don't have a thing, but I was looking up, during the 2013, this had to be the NLCS. I tweeted out, I'm just going to quote myself here. This was at a game at Dodger Stadium. Sad that Dodger Stadium video board didn't identify Ken Jeong, parentheses, attempting to pump up the crowd, as the second worst part of community. Maybe he searched his name at some point. But this was 2013. But I mean, I just didn't notice. Maybe he's blocked me that whole time. But I just thought it was funny. I don't care like either way. But I was just like, oh man, I didn't. You know, I want people to like me.
I like you, Eric.
Yeah, thanks. You haven't blocked me on Twitter yet.
Don't think so. So yeah. You want me to?
No.
Having had to go back to research walk-offs this weekend, what are your memories of the recent Dodgers to hit them? And he brings up, as you did, Andre Ethier's 2009, the captain comeback year.
Yeah, Ethier was great in 2009. The fact that I believe we hit, I forget if, I think this was in the True Blue LA comments where his nickname was Andre. It could have been Dodger Thoughts, honestly, but since it was 2009, I think it was True Blue LA, but not sure. But like he was Andre Ethier that year. I thought that was a fun sort of nickname. One of the ones that stand out to me was, I think, Matt Kemp in 2011. He had 3 walk-off home runs that year. But there was one, I think it was against the Cardinals, and I think Ryan Franklin was the pitcher. And it was one of those where, like, I think they were down, if I'm not mistaken. I could look this up, but I like to just go off the cuff on this one since I just thought of it. But there were a couple runners on base, or maybe just one, and they decided to pitch to Matt Kemp, who that year almost won the Triple Crown. He almost went 40-40. And Vin Scully's call after the home run was like, the Cardinals decided to pitch to the one man who could beat them, and he did. It was like a classic, like great little Vin, like sum it all up in one sentence at the end. So that was pretty neat. I don't know. I mean, the Max Muncy World Series, that's obviously great. And the Justin Turner in the NLCS was cool. But like in terms of regular season ones, those were probably the ones that stood out to me.
What's really funny is when I read this question immediately, the one I was going to bring up was Juan Uribe's home run, which was not a walk-off home run. It's just in my head it is. But the one that is special to my heart, because I was there at the Juan Uribe game, I was there for Bobble Slam, 2 very famous home runs, neither of which were walk-offs.
But, it should have been.
The only walk-off home run I can distinctly remember I was in attendance for was, what a wonderful game that I'm glad I got to attend. It was in 2006. Jason Schmidt versus Greg Maddux.
Oh, I can already tell you that. I can tell you the pitcher who gave it up.
Who was it?
Vinny Chulp.
Well done. I thought you were going to screw it up. Good job.
No.
Greg Maddux's game score was 82. He went 8 innings,
68 pitches. If I remember,
yeah, you are correct. Yeah. What just a beautiful game. Takashi Saito with the win, it was a 0-0 game in the 10th, and Russell Martin walked it off first batter.
We need to do. I need to do Dodgers rerun on Takashi Saito. He was awesome.
Yeah,
like he was so
great. One of my favorites.
The Dodgers had no right to expect to have any closer of any merit after they had Eric Gagne. And then Takashi Saito stepped in and was like, well, close enough. You know, like, he was really good. But, like, just thinking about that Sunday night game was so good, the Maddux-Jason Schmidt game. Look, sure, it led to Jason Schmidt getting $47 million for the Dodgers with a frayed shoulder, but whatever. But, like, that game itself was just insane. And I don't remember the time of game on that, but it had to be short, but that reminds me.
2 hours, 27 minutes. Have it pulled up.
So the Walker F. Buehler game Friday night, and this was one I didn't realize till after because the game was so intense and awesome. Like, no one cares about the time when the game's good, right? Like, and so once the game was over, 2 hours, 12 minutes Friday night.
Wow.
Like, it was Germán Márquez, he went 8. Like, it's the only game this year that both pitchers have gone 8. Plus, so it was a very good game, very awesome, and very short. So, like, you just don't see that.
Already answered Craig's fourth question. He wanted to know if there's any other Dodgers we could make an all-star case for, which we did. Oh, yeah. You tried hard for Max Muncy. We'll hope.
Yeah, I think so.
Last question. Here's a chance to revise or confirm your predictions for the Dodgers record and lead at the all-star break. Going 9-4 over the last 13 games gets them to 63-29, which would tie them for the 2017 team for the best mark at 92 games.
So
I don't remember right.
I said 18-8. They've already gone 9-4. They need to go 9-4 again. That would put them at the 63-29. You said 19-7.
And so I said 64.
So I'm
winning this bet. This is great.
I think so. I mean, you could stick with it. I mean, I'm going to stick with mine, I think.
Okay.
I don't remember what I said for the lead. I think I may have said 13 and you said 14.
Maybe.
If I remember.
Lower than that, but
they're already at 13. You might have went to 15. Honestly, I don't remember. We should listen back. We should plan more for these.
you can find a way to archive them. Now that honestly, I'm not editing, I can probably figure out a
solution. I will say, yeah, someone who's listening, set up a True Blue Eye podcast wiki.
No, I can do this. I'll get on this.
So they're already 13 up, right? They played the Rockies four times. It's all division for the last 2 weeks. So I think I said 14. I think I'll say 15.
Okay. Yeah, 15 sounds fine. Yeah. I'll go with you.
I may have said, like I said, I even contradicted myself. I may have said 13 and you said 14 before, but whatever. I'm going 15 right now. So,
well, that's the episode, Eric.
Wow. See, this is one of those like where we didn't talk about anything about the Giants series. Like it seems like so long.
I got lost in that one. We don't want to talk about it.
That's how jam-packed that series was against the Rockies. Like, man, what a weekend. And oh yeah, Kershaw like pitched 7 scoreless the other day and is like totally forgotten. It's Kershaw Greinke tonight. By the time you listen to this, that game will be over. But we don't get that matchup very often. It's only the second time. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully we'll have more Walker F. Buehler games and other things to talk about next week. Thanks for listening.